Nerds!
Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Smart Travel doesn't just cover points and miles. They break down all the financial aspects of your trip, whether that's the best days to book, how to avoid hidden fees, or which fancy travel credit cards pay off, and which ones are just an expensive flex. If you want your travel budget to work harder, then dive into the best deals, products, services, and more with Smart Travel from NerdWallet, wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
At some point this summer, the only thing I got to do is I got to get in another hot dog derby. Said the agreement should be that if I get another hot dog derby, they said it was over on Twitch. They said they'll donate $150 to the charity of my choice if I win, but I have to put $50 in the show fund for each time I race in the hot dog derby after this if I lose.
If I
continue to do it, I owe a debt.
The Royals should ban you from hot dog derbies. You've had your four chances. Let somebody else in Kansas City have a moment, you know?
There's one every day. It's fine.
Yeah, there's plenty of people.
Any one of them.
There's plenty of people who'll never have that chance to do it.
Yeah, I still need my chances until I win. I want to be in at least one hot dog derby a year until I win. So if you're listening,
you realize your odds get worse every year.
Oh, I know. That's why I got to get in them now.
Your odds are getting worse every year.
It's like if I'm 50, I've got like no chance unless you're just putting me in the geriatric race.
Yeah.
At this point, I'm going to have to rig the thing, you know, in order to do it.
That's exactly right. So we'll figure out if anybody has some more clarity on their stance yesterday from what was said in the 1 o'clock hour as we get through the show today. A little bit later on, Vern is going to join us, our Royals insider. He'll join us at 12:30. We'll talk plenty about what's going on with the Royals, including Noah Cameron making his MLB debut tonight.
Very
That's because Cole Reagan's
that.
Unfortunately still dealing with that injury. But Noah Cameron, obviously, is exciting. But sometimes somebody makes an MLB debut, especially a pitcher, starting pitcher, because you know you want to find out maybe there's a possibility to show where the organization is development wise with the pitching in the minor league level. So we'll get to that in a little bit. But the Royals get the first game of their series against the Rays last night. And I know it's way early for right now it's a joke if we're talking about DiMaggio and stuff, but Bobby Wood Jr. has a 20-game hitting streak. It's now the eighth Royals player he is to ever do that. I think we can, not for DiMaggio, but we can now start paying attention every single night on the hitting streak front. Like when it's 12, it's like, oh, that's a really nice hitting streak. Like that's pretty impressive, but it's not, you're not really watching it every night. Like, oh my gosh, is he going to get another hit to get to 13 or 14? Now that you get to 20, now it starts to at least get real of like, all right, let's keep an eye on this.
Because the Royals record is 31, as we had mentioned. That's held by Whit Merrifield, who broke it in 2019, I believe. He broke it from George Brett, pretty good Royals player overall, to go in there. What stands out more about this hit streak, and Brett did it during his time, Whit's was on, I covered it. It was split between 2018 and 2019. He actually started the hitting streak in 2018. They were a miserably bad baseball team. It was like the only thing to pay attention to in the early part of the season for the Royals during that time. So it felt like a weirdly, not no pressure because a 30-game hitting streak comes with pressure, but like a lower pressure hitting streak because more than half of it occurred in the season before and you were just opening up the season. Because they have no offense, like Witt's hit last night didn't feel like, ooh, Whit got a hit. It's like, damn, they need a Whit to get a hit so they could get an insurance run so they can win this baseball game. Like, his hits feel important right now because of their lack of offense.
The way they're pitching him, too. We've heard Q talk about this because of what you have right now in the order. But also just teams, like any team, when you have a player that had as dominant of a season as Bobby had last year in any sport, right? they're going to, in the offseason, they're gonna look even deeper into what can we do to try to prevent this guy from beating us. All the great players have to make that adjustment to the adjustment to the adjustment, right? And I think that's why it's even more impressive right now. I mean, teams are pitching Bobby Witt Jr. tougher than he's probably ever seen his entire big league career to this point.
Yes.
And yet he's got a 20-game hitting streak. So I'm
they
not telling
fully
you.
Pitch around him right now. Nobody else. Yeah. Vinny's hitting really cold right behind him.
Yeah.
So like, why would you, I'd pitch extra careful to Bobby right now.
Yeah. Right now it's tongue in cheek talking about 37 away from DiMaggio, breaking DiMaggio. But I'm keeping an eye on it. Like, especially for the Royals one, you can't even consider the next one until you get past the Royals one at 31. But yeah, how long can this thing go? Can we be sitting here in a couple weeks and this thing's at 33, something like that? And then it gets fun.
I think in order for that to be realistic, I know we just said he's got 20 without it. They really need some other people to pick it up on him, including Vinny. Song didn't work yesterday. Again, my standard has always been, Cody. Hold on, wait.
Cody gets 2 weeks for it to work.
Or not work. I always told, well, not like, and then, by the way, 2 weeks doesn't mean like he gets to have one game, good game in 2 weeks. It's a two-game average aggregate of what they did before and what they did after.
We've gone over this before. Like, that's my standard. Last night, if you went a home run, you would have said it worked.
No, I wouldn't have. I would have said off to a good start.
Okay, all right.
Off to a good start. Right. 2 weeks is the standard. We'll see. Did not work last night. Yeah. He had several opportunities to get a run home and was unable to do so. They still won. But it's going to require, Jonathan India and Bobby Witt Jr., or I'm sorry, and Vinny Pasquantino doing some stuff around him so that they can't just fully pitch around him. Because if that game was 2-1 the other way and they were in the lead, they might just walk Bobby last night. He might not even have a chance to get the single that he got in the seventh inning in order to extend his hit streak. They might just work around and get to Vinny, who's hitting, I don't know, 170 or 175 right now. I will point out he's still leading the team in RBI, so he's still at least doing something of value for a team that is struggling offensively across the board. I think any sentence that starts with, should they be looking to take him out of the lineup, is insane because they've got, I don't know, four other guys who aren't hitting, and they don't have like a pathway of AAA players who are just lighting the world on fire either. But yeah, the offense, it just like, every day feels like deja vu for them right now, except for in the early part of the season, they were losing the games and now they're winning them. Their pitching is incredible. Michael Lorenzen's out there dealing now too. It's not just the regular guys. Lorenzen's shoving for the squad. So like he went out there and gave him one run innings last night?
Yeah, he was really good last night.
Just the one shot to center field was all that caught him?
That's your fifth starter. you know, you're getting that from your fifth starter. And look, I think this is where, you know, having some vets in that rotation really help. When you have your ace, Cole Reagan's down right now due to an injury, who's stepping up? You know, like, yes, directly tonight, Noah Camara has a chance to do that. But more realistically, you need your vet. You need Michael Lorenzen to put together some of his better outings while you're dealing with Cole Reagan's not being there, because now you have a guy making his MLB debut in your rotation that's not experienced. So, and you don't know what that's going to turn out to be. So yeah, you needed that from Lorenzen. You couldn't afford for him to blow up last night and tax the bullpen.
No, you just take the loop.
Tonight, hopefully Noah Cameron pitches great, but you never know. It's a debut. He could go three innings. He could go seven. I don't know, right? We're going to find out. But in case he doesn't make it through three or four, you might have to use the bullpen a bunch tonight. And the fact that Lorenzen did that for you, it really provides you some flexibility tonight against the Rays.
I think for a while, and this is like where I make the argument, like yesterday we were talking about the Royals are a good team, and I stand by that, is the other part where like we were talking about when they were beating up on like a bad team in the Colorado Rockies, the worst team in baseball right now, based on record and I don't know, every other conceivable thing, they're going to end up being the worst team in baseball this year. I just want to point out that while the Astros and the Rays, two teams they faced, were around 500, I'm not saying they were the New York Yankees or anything outside of that. The rest of the AL looks pretty mediocre outside of the Yankees, maybe the Tigers, depending on how you're looking at them. The Astros came into the Royals having won 5 of 6 games, and the Rays had won 5 games in a row. So they were taking on teams who were coming in hot against you, and you stopped them from continuing that. And like, I'm not like, the Rays series is not over, but they had won 5 games in a row, and you're like, nah, sorry, we're going to go and take this one. Appreciate it. And then we'll get to the rest of the series, the day game tomorrow and the game tonight for Noah Cameron. So they are doing that. I am a little bit worried that Cole Reagan's missed a start, but the fact that they had no IL trip for him.
Yeah. To this point,
Joel Goldberg was saying last night that he was hopeful he'd be able to make the start today for them. Has me optimistic. It's just one game and then everything's okay. The best possible sign is Noah Cameron goes out there and throws 7 shutout innings. And you're like, well, hello, got some other, we kept talking about Kyle Wright and some guys in the who haven't even like, or Alec Marsh, who are not even like back from or started injuries, rehab assignments in some case. I think Kyle Wright has a rehab start tonight. If Noah Cameron's good, I mean, the pitching depth is at an all-time high.
Long-term, it looks better if that actually were to happen. It also gives you flexibility with the potential innings limitation that might be...
Could be coming out of...
Coming for Chris Bubich.
Yeah, we hope not, but it could be there at some point, sure.
Yeah, so that would be that'd be something to keep in mind. And just overall, I mean, we already mentioned it a week or two ago. If they were to have to make a move at some point closer to the trade deadline, even if you're in it, well, we've mentioned there's some guys, maybe Michael Lorenzen just pitched great last night. Like, even if you're not sellers, Michael Lorenzen could still be a candidate involved in a trade just because of where he's at. And in order to pull something off like that, you would need to have confidence that you have, of course, somebody that can step right in to the rotation, that is. So, yeah, it still continues to be this work in progress with the offense. Right now, just keep buying yourself time while the offense
is trying to win every game. 3-1, 3-2 right now. Yeah.
And eventually you hope that the offense gets going. It certainly beats the alternative of losing these games, obviously. So we'll talk some Royals baseball throughout the show. Today, we're going to talk about what we're seeing down in AA with Cags and compare it to how some of the other prospects in Royals history have performed in AA. What does it tell us? Is it just all about the numbers? Does it guarantee anything? We'll take a deeper dive in that a little bit later on this hour. Of course, our Cody and Gold road trip presented by The Art of Sports is this Saturday in Springfield. Over 200 listeners now have joined us and are going to be there in Springfield Saturday night.
We're meeting at Harbell's from 3:30 to 5. For those of you who pre-ordered the shirts, that's when we'll hand them out. Harbell's 3:30 to 5. Tickets still available at 96.5thefan.com. They are just $10. Weather looks gorgeous, I'll say. It's not Mother's Day weekend. If you're just looking for a way to spend an afternoon down in Springfield, take the kids, take the family, just come down and hang out with us. We're staying the night. So, like, we'll have a drink with you or whatever, hang out, try to catch up with everyone at Harbell's before and at the game, of course, down there for the Springfield Cardinals. And then Alex and I are staying down there, Dusty as well, from the morning shows coming down, and Drew will be there, and we're going to stay the night. So, like, you know, we can find a place to hang out afterwards and all that stuff. Should be a great trip. The fact that 200 of you, I'm not kidding, we did this for Bobby Wood Jr., and look, the timing was weird. It was like
right after COVID,
our show, just flat out honest with you, wasn't quite as popular then as it seems to be now based on listenership. So, like, we've gained a little bit of a trustworthiness from the audience, which we appreciate. Like, all of that stuff. I think we maybe had, I was looking at a photo, I think maybe we had like 50, 60 people down there to watch Bobby Witt Jr., and we're going to have 200 people down there to watch Cags. It's going to be an awesome time. So, 96.5thefan.com. If you'd like more information on that.
Yeah, thanks to The Art of Sports for jumping on this road trip with us as well. And we're working on some cool things with them. If you're looking for your collectibles, if you're looking for maybe a Caglione card, Bobby Witt, Patrick Mahomes, whatever it is, right? If you're a collector or looking to get into collecting, The Art of Sports, they're located there in Town Center. All right, let's talk some Chiefs football, though, a little bit. We mentioned what they have on the defensive line depth going forward. And I told you, I don't know if I fully agree that they're really, really deep on the defensive line. They're relying on two rookies now to be part of that depth. It's something that they needed to address in the draft, and they did. But it's anchored, obviously, by a future Hall of Famer in Chris Jones. And we were just going through some of the numbers for some of these guys a year ago. Like, what's the expectation for Karlaftis? What's the expectation for Chris Jones? And the one thing that stood out to us, and I think it tells you that numbers can mislead, but also maybe are you worried that at some point the age thing can catch up? Chris Jones had 5 sacks last year. Yet throughout the year, the story was always that watch this guy play and the impact he's having for everybody else. And that's what I mean by a little misleading. Although 5's a big
sacks
drop.
Don't matter.
Five's a big drop.
Yeah, that's what stands out is I think sometimes we get so caught up in the Travis Kelce age part of it that we don't want to ask the question yet about Chris Jones. I would say age affects a player of that size and of that position more commonly earlier than it would for a player like tight end. Although wide receivers, they do fail early sometimes. Corners sometimes can age quickly in there. He's 30 years old. I don't know when he'll turn 31, but he's 30 years old as it sits right now.
Yeah, I was going to say, he was still first-team All-Pro last year. Teams just flat-out said, we're not letting you beat us. And this is where he needs complimentary pieces next to him. This is where Charles Omenihue being on the team for a full year and on the field, hopefully, right? Knock on wood.
Yeah.
I think can really help him. Yeah, the rookie, Norman Locke can play a piece, Gelati. But I think when you look at what he did in terms of disrupting defenses, or offensive lines, I should say, on defense, while I would like to see at least 7 or 8 sacks, I'm not worried yet on the, oh, he's fallen off a cliff. He was an all pro last year.
Sure. But like that, you know, like some of that's grandfathered a little, admittedly, because he was the all pro 2 years in a row. And I'm not claiming Chris Jones sucked. I definitely don't want that on record. But that is the lowest sack total he's had since he was a rookie and 22 years old. That is the lowest total he's had since he was a rookie. 6.5 being his other previous low. In the years up to that, the lowest he had in the last 7 years was like 7.5. He's had 10.5 multiple times, 15.5 multiple times, or 10.5 once, 15.5 multiple times. It's a standout year from a sack total. And it's part of the reason their sack totals were so low as a team. So like I've heard people say, their pass rush, they got to dramatically improve it. It's been so bad. Can't work with just Chris Jones. It's like last year they were 18th in sacks. The previous 2 years, they were second. And the reason why is Chris Jones was getting 5 to 10, depending on the year, more sacks than he got last year. If Chris Jones had 10 more sacks last year, the Chiefs are not 18th in sacks. They are like 7th. And they are perfectly acceptable. To see they need Chris Jones to have that number back. I'm just asking.
8 to 10,
is age
honestly
some sort of factor? I'd say if it's a 2-year trend, then I care. If it's he only has 6.5 this year and they drafted 2 more defensive linemen and, you know, they don't offer more help. But if he just like stalls out in the sack department, I am going to start thinking it's age. I don't think that way now, but you'd have to admit that a 2-year trend would point to that.
Back to back, five sack seasons. I would also say that means they got bigger problems on the defensive line in general. Like eventually,
like those, nobody's helping.
Yeah. I mean, I think if you watch Chris Jones play, we brought it up during the season. There were plenty of times where like they look how disruptive he is, and yet he's not getting the sacks, and what that led to a season for Carl Loftus, and hopefully what it can lead to for Charles Minnehue. So it's hard for me to sit here and think like he's already fallen off that cliff. I disagree with that. But yeah, the sack numbers, you would like that at minimum to be the 8 to 10 range at this point in time. He'll be what, 31 by the end of the season, or is he already 31?
I just know, well, I don't know, Pro Football Talks.
He turns 31 in July, so he'll be 31 throughout the entire season.
Yeah, I mean, look, at a player, and players at defensive tackle can certainly be viable, really good defensive players.
What likelihood would you give that he just jumps back to let's say we wake up and it's January and he's got 10.5 sacks. I think that is still a 50-50 proposition.
That was almost number I gave. I was like, I was trying to think about it because there's a good chance that it's not age. So, like, there is a chance that it's not that and that it goes in there. But, like, he's the single biggest, like, if we're saying, how do they fix the pass rush from last year? Chris Jones is the single biggest swing player that impacts that. He just is. Like, one way or the other, he's going to be the person who determines whether or not they're 18th in sacks this year or whether or not or if they move up to 9th. They did lose, and I'll point this out because this is how bad they were in sacks last year. They actually lost the guy who was second in team in sacks last year, and that was Turk Wharton. And like that, again, not a good number, not nearly high enough for him, but Turk Wharton was technically higher than Chris Jones in sacks last year. And that part of it is like, yeah, he's probably just opening things up for Turk Wharton and making his life easier. I watch Chris Jones play. I still see the impact he has on the game. I'm not saying that. But if he's, you know, this works, 100% Chris Jones impacts the game in every play. Yeah. 90% Aaron Donald by the time it was towards the end, he wasn't the same Aaron Donald. Chris Jones had surpassed him by the time that their careers had ended. What I'm trying to avoid is that.
You guys saw right before we hopped on the air today the news that the NFL fined the Falcons.
I did see that. They fined the Falcons $250,000.
Falcons were fined $250,000. Defensive coordinator Jeff Ulbrich, $100,000 for that Shedeur Sanders prank call. Remember, he had the iPad out and his son saw the number and did the prank call. Just think for a second, the same
your kid
scenario.
Cost you $100,000?
If Cody, you have kids, if your son in this hypothetical cost you personally $100,000 and the company you work for $250,000, what the hell's the punishment? Also, by the way, let's be real, you're getting fired from your normal company.
Well, yeah, this job, sure.
But same scenario.
Cash equivalent.
What's the punishment for your son who's 21 in this hypothetical, and then your company there's no way your company normally is keeping you employed. Jeff Ulbrich better hope his defense is top 5 in football this year. His ass is getting fired after this year.
Look, 21 year olds are hard to ground.
Yeah.
Right. This is just going to go down as the single biggest life lesson we have as a group.
Most expensive prank call in world history.
And I'm not saying the kid has to pay me back $100,000, but he is in debt. He will owe me debt. Like, this is, we are in service, like, mowing the grass. Like, you are in it for a while. Anything I need painted, moved, mowed, you're on the hook for a long time, kid. A long time. I was a little surprised to see Adam Schefter. I saw he was really saying, like, this is really the NFL's fault. They should have better security measures. This feels like a personal responsibility thing for me. If you, in your iPad for your job, contain lots of confidential information, you better be damn sure who you're leaving it around. Like, I think this is a personal responsibility thing more for me than it is the other way around. Like, I don't feel like this is the NFL's fault for not securing Shedeur Sanders and other prospects' numbers.
They might want to revisit.
I feel like you got to just, like, maybe keep an eye on your stuff.
The
know?
NFL might want to revisit how they go about it, right? They send every player a phone, right, with these numbers. They might want to figure out what process they're using. There's probably some truth to that. But ultimately, no, this lies on both the kid, most importantly, right, that did the prank call, and then, of course, the dad, who was the defensive coordinator for the Atlanta Falcons. Because, look, I understand the Falcons owner is very, 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 very wealthy. Still, he didn't like getting fined $250,000 for literally something he had no business, like, not even had nothing to do with. Yeah, he got fined $250,000. You cost your employer $250,000. Is there any other job in the world that you can cost your employer $250,000?
I think that actually happened in this building once, so, like, I don't want to say for sure, but, like, there was a number attached to that for an FCC fine in this building once, and that person got to keep their job.
Fair enough. Okay.
So, like, it's rare, though.
There's no...
And it's got to be, you better be the best damn person at your job, I'll say. You better be at that. You better... His job on defensive coordinator, he better be, like, top 5 points per game. Because if you're, like, 12th this year, that ain't cutting it, Jeff. Bad news for you. You can't be 12th in points per game on defense this year and just feel like you
can
just keep
promise
the work.
You. I can just promise you.
If, how much does he make? What percentage of his salary is that? He probably makes $1.5 million?
1.6. Last year as a DC in New York. I don't know what he's making for the Falcons, but let's just say it's very similar.
So, I mean, he cost him... I mean, imagine the check. Like, we're the debt. Like, no more Uber Eats either. Whatever lifestyle things we were enjoying, that gravy train's up. The $100,000 I got to pay per check. And I imagine in this case, they just, like, dock your check. They don't, like, they don't ask you to just pony it up.
How much,
like,
did you say?
$100,000. He made $1.6 million.
Okay.
So, I mean, it's a good chunk of his... Now, it's pre-tax.
Text line. Dropped a pallet of 64 cases of wine off a truck once on accident. Oh. Most money I've cost the company. Maybe, $3,000 to $5,000. See, that's not good. But that's still... That's chump change compared to what we're talking about here.
Oh, yeah. Because, like, I've broken things that... I ripped an entire sink out of a wall once at a job on accident. I've broken cases of alcohol. Like, I've done... I've cost the company money before at, you know, places I've worked. Not would be the equivalent of, you know, some massive hit to their operating income.
Do we know, it's a fair question, do we know the other players that got prank called as well, right? It wasn't just Shedeur Sanders.
Tyler Warren.
Okay, they got called. Do we not know who, is that why there's not been punishment with that? Because they're only focusing on Shedeur Sanders and only Olbrich is getting fined. Is that just because they
maybe
fessed up?
Maybe pass it off to his buddy
they
and
fessed
he just took
up,
the heat.
Or is there somebody else that leaked it? Or is it the assumption that he leaked all the numbers?
Right now, I haven't heard anything. I guess my assumption is that he was the leak.
Yeah, like
for any of the crank calls, like, maybe he did more than one, and maybe the leak started with him.
Someone texted and said, they own a company. If anyone cost me $250,000, I would fire everyone. Yeah, understandably so. That's what I'm saying. Very few jobs, very few, can you cost your company $250,000 and just keep your job?
No. No. I'm assuming if right now today I cost this company, I don't know how, like, I just busted out all this glass and started lighting stuff on fire. I don't know what I'd have to do to cost the company $250,000 today.
Well, that would be criminal action
fine.
As well. That'd be property. Like, that'd be like,
other than an FCC fine. Like, if I just started saying the 7 dirty words from George Carlin and I cost the company $250,000, I imagine I'm out.
Yeah. I don't think any of us in this room right now costing Odyssey $250,000 is going to be employed tomorrow. Spoiler. So that's what I'm saying. It's just a wild story. Wild story. Someone says, I was an armored truck driver, lost a bag with over $50,000 in it. Luckily, it was found and returned. Someone returned it with all 50? Good for them. Good for them. That didn't happen in Chicago. We told you about that story.
I mean, there's all kinds of stories over here. I had a coworker at an insurance company a few years ago step on a DaVinci roof. I don't even know what that is. Broke a tile, had to replace the entire roof. It was $85,000.
Jeez.
Oh.
Someone says, you guys don't have a comment on the fine coming down from the NFL of the Falcons. That's literally what we've been talking about for 8 minutes.
Yeah, that's exactly what we're
exactly.
Oh, you know what? And I talked about all that stuff. Remember, I crashed a company car once. So I definitely cost $10,000.
And you kept your job at that time? Or no?
I did. It went 250, but I probably... Okay, so including the damage to the truck and the property damage I did, I'm going to guess... God, they never told me the number. I could ask, I guess. I'm going to guess I caused $15,000 worth of damage. I'm going to guess I... And I kept my job.
But that was directly covered by insurance, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
that's that probably saved
you. Oh, yeah, you know what? Yeah, in fairness, not $15,000 out of the bottom. Yeah,
there's
yeah.
insurance.
Not out of their own
The Falcons
pocket.
The Falcons, again, their owner is going to be just fine.
I probably
the Falcons,
cost them $1,000. You're right.
Yeah.
Like a deductible or something.
Someone says, where does the money go? Anytime they find players and stuff like this, it goes to... They have a charity fund, basically, right? Like a giant pool of money for charity and causes. It's not like Roger Goodell is pocketing $250,000 for those saying it's a money grab that goes to charity. If it is a money grab, it's at least a money grab for charity.
Yeah.
All right.
The best kind of money grab.
All right. Up next, though, we keep talking about development for a certain player. Is there a such thing as a developmental year for this type of player? We'll explain who that is next.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today.
And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Oh, yeah, we're just getting started here on a Wednesday. It's Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you here in 25 minutes. I got some news for you guys. I got some pretty big news for you guys.
Yeah, yeah. I think the listeners will be interested to know how your weekend went.
Yeah, it was...
No, he's not. They're going to guess you got engaged or something. You better,
Someone immediately was going to guess shotgun wedding. It is news. Yeah, no, I can 1,000% promise you.
It's going to be something to show us to follow for a while.
Yeah, all I will say, yes, I did not get engaged. It's not to that level. It's something that I think is pretty wild. And yeah, we'll just leave it at that.
A moment you won't forget.
Yeah, well, for sure.
Place.
And it's, yeah, for sure. We'll get in more detail coming up in 25 minutes or so. Yeah, you're right, though. I'm glad you went ahead and jumped in.
I immediately could see the text being like, Mazel Tov, and just like, Alex got hitched.
Nope.
You don't seem like the shotgun wedding type.
Absolutely not. Yeah, absolutely not. That was definitely not what we're going to talk about.
You don't seem like the would get married under 18 to 24 months.
I think that would be the minimum time, is my guess. Yeah. So anyway, you can keep guessing. Go ahead.
From the
keep
guessing. You cooked a full meal and then ate the leftovers?
Yeah, you can keep guessing.
From 913. You called the Vegas tour guide back?
That's funny.
She's moving to KC. Big news.
913. We might be going to Vegas again coming up in August, but we'll see
careful
how that goes.
You post on social.
Yeah, no kidding. 913-586-7965. You can keep guessing, but we'll get to that in 25 minutes. In the meantime, let's talk about the Chiefs' first round draft pick, Josh Simmons, some more. Because you were saying something, we were talking off air about this and how we view this upcoming season for Josh Simmons.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of people discuss this as like a, you know, kind of goes back to the conversation of, can he sit an entire year, right? Can he sit an entire year? Can he develop an entire year? And the more I was thinking, I was like, can you even develop a left tackle? Like, do people do that? Like, I'm not kidding around. There are a lot of positions that I think you can slow walk into the NFL. Running back, wide receiver, defensive lineman, I'd say it's incredibly common with. Hell, even in second and third corners a lot of times, in safeties, they kind of work their way up the depth chart until they become full-time starters. We talk about it with Chanel and Connor and Cook and Tyreek Hill and a million other wide receivers throughout there. Tackle is like the one position on the field where I do not think we talk draft and development. Offensive line, center, guard, tackle, if you are good, you play immediately. So the more I was thinking about it is talking about a development year good for Josh Simmons? If he's healthy and can play, shouldn't he just be playing? Can he develop on the bench? I'm not even sure that's a thing at left tackle. I'm not saying 0%, like there's no examples, but we have to admit that happens way less.
I don't view it as a developmental year if he doesn't play, only because we know the narrative around this whole thing. It's not even a narrative, it's just reality, is about the health and the injury in the patellar tendon and the Chiefs banking on their medical staff and the trust in them, et cetera. I don't view if Josh Simmons, let's say, ends up on the PUP list or ends up not participating much in the offseason. I know that, by the way, I know the Chiefs are saying he's going to, but I am still very skeptical. That's all. If it happens to be that it's just Jalen Moore at left tackle, it's Juwan Taylor at right tackle, I don't think it will be a developmental year in the way we would normally talk about a developmental year, right? Like a quarterback sitting all year, that's a developmental year. I don't think a left tackle is having a development year in this case because this would be because he wouldn't fully be recovered. Yeah. I know they're claiming they think he's on track to be that. I think it would be very clear if he does not start week one, it would be because of the injury, not because of overall performance. The injury would cause him not to be ready.
So I agree with you if the injury becomes the obvious reason why he's not. But let's just say he starts a camp. He's there the entire time. He practices and he doesn't start. Well, then they are calling a development year. And then I would actually prefer he just hurt. I'd feel worse about it. If he didn't just win the job right away, even though he was healthy all of camp.
Yeah, I'm not worried about the talent.
I'm more worried about it if it's a development year and they don't want him to start right away because that feels like, because then what I feel like we're walking into is we're walking into this massive unknown in 2026. Look, Kingsley got benched and they even started him. Kingsley couldn't make it through the first month of the season and they let him start. And I understand there's more competition between Juwan Taylor and his massive contract and Moore, who they gave a pretty good amount of money to as well, but not Juwan Taylor money, certainly. So I understand there's more competition than there was for Kingsley out on the onset. But if he's healthy, then doesn't start, they are calling a development year. And if it's that, then I just haven't seen that very often at left tackle. Not zero, yeah. Not ever. But offensive line is like running back. It's like the one position that you just say, you're the starter now. Like, congratulations, we drafted you, and now you start.
If you're a first-round pick, I agree. I would totally disagree that offensive linemen aren't picked in the third round and actually absolutely are viewed as developmental guys
first
all the time.
Pick. Yeah, I guess
I think
it's
the first-round pick
yeah.
thing. Because there's plenty of examples of guys that are, especially guards, not tackles, but that are taken in the third round. And in this case, we're talking about the Chiefs, Andy Heck and Andy Reid. They develop them, and 2 years later, you end up actually having a Nick Allegretti that ends up now being a starting player somewhere else in the league.
I think it's normally a guard or center, and it's usually, in a lower, not pick 31 overall, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you don't usually develop a left tackle. They just start. Like, left tackle specifically, I think you're probably right in some of the other. And Jalen Moore is kind of a developmental left tackle in a way because he was stuck behind Trent Williams.
Did you see that? So Jalen Moore was backing up Trent Williams all these years. That's one reason maybe why he didn't play. We're going to find out if it was just because he had a Hall of Famer in front of him or because he's not good enough to be a starting left tackle. We'll get the answer this year, probably. But the 49ers yesterday signed DJ Humphries.
Oh, I did see that.
Of course, DJ Humphries was brought in midseason, and he was viewed as the savior. He played in three quarters of a game and got hurt, and we never saw him again.
Nope. I would have been interested. Like, I like... Now they've got protection.
Before
because
we talked about
their
the
protection
depth,
now is Josh Simmons, obviously. Yeah. Before that, I'd have been like, just any vet who can just like technically play tackle so we don't have to get stuck back on guard. And you only had the option at guard because Joe Tooney exists. The option at left guard now would likely be moving Kingsley Suamataia back out there, which is not exactly what we're looking to do. It just depends largely on the injury. But if he is healthy, he practices all the training camp, and then they call this a developmental year, I'm going to be further down on it. I'm going to be less optimistic about how they walk into 2026 because they're telling you he's not just ready injury-wise, he's not ready play-wise, which is a more concerning thing.
We know we're going to see CAGS on Saturday. We've talked a lot about that. Over 200 of you are signed up. Cannot wait to see you guys in Springfield. It's going to be a great time. We're really, really excited to meet you guys at Harbell's as well. For those of you that pre-ordered the t-shirts that we'll be wearing behind the third base dugout and everything. But we wanted to dive deeper into what we're seeing from CAGS because we've talked a ton about the numbers and specifically where he's at on home runs versus strikeouts and obviously just overall on base percentage and everything. And they were off yesterday. They had a rainout, I guess, I think it was in Springfield. So CAGS did not play yesterday.
Got a double dip today, I think. Or no, it's Friday. They got a doubleheader.
Okay, is it Friday? Yeah. So the numbers that we look at for guys in double A and the automatic assumption like, well, if he's doing this in double A, this equates to blank in the big leagues. Now, I'll admit these other names we're about to bring up were not number one prospects in the organization, though.
One was.
So what we'll get to the name. One name was. Some of these other guys weren't. So CAGS is already he's a college player. last year, was a top pick. He's the number one prospect in your organization. He's a top 50 prospect, I believe, right, in baseball. Yeah. So he's a little bit different anyway. But go through. I know you compiled some of these numbers of some guys that have made it to the big leagues in their career already. And we all know how some of these guys have performed in the big leagues. And this is how effective they were also in double A. The argument that they could just go straight from double A to the big leagues, or Cags could right now. This is why you wonder, why does it take some time?
All of these guys had way more games than Cags currently has in double A. And I'll give you his stats as well. I was going over these numbers with David Leskie because we're going back and forth just talking about baseball and whether or not the Royals and what they're doing with Cags makes sense. Yep. Here's Cags' numbers right out of the gate. He's 22 years old. He's hitting 282 with a 360 on base percentage. He walks 11% of the time. He strikes out 24% of the time. And he swings and misses 31% of the time. Numbers that are like acceptable to go in there. He's the number one prospect in the Royal system. He's a top 50 prospect in all of baseball. I will say every single person on this list was at one time a top 100 prospect in Major League Baseball.
Okay.
So they, like, if you're just figuring out how they got here, how they got to the majors, what this looked like, all five of the names I'm about to give you were top 100 prospects in MLB Pipeline's rankings at some point in their career. Next player, 285, very similar, 372, slightly better than Cags, walked a little bit more, struck out less, and swung and missed less, by about 5% less. That guy was MJ Melendez, the guy they just sent down to AAA. Next player, 22 years old, he hit 272, so about 10 points worse, got on base at 404 better than Cags, walked 5% more than Cags, struck out 5% more. So he walked more, but he struck out more, more of a true three outcome, swung and missed a lot more. Top 100 prospect, 22 years old, played about 60 more games in double A than they're at Cags right now. That guy, Nick Prado. Next up, I got two more, and then we're going to talk about what this means. 23 years old, hit 310, quite a bit better. That's 30 points or 20 points better. 405 on base, walked 2% more, struck out 13% less than Caglione, and then also whipped 15% less than Caglione. Those stand out, right? You're like, okay, I've given you two busts so far. Not busts, but like MJ was a three-year big leaguer, is now back down in the minors. Prado has not worked out in the big league level at all. Vinny Pasquantino was the third guy, a guy who's struggling right now at the bigs, but has overall been a nice big league player. So far I've given you a was a big leaguer, isn't currently, never really established themselves as a big leaguer, mostly a bust. Vinny, a solid big league player. I know someone's going to say not because of the first 30 games of the season. I'll say that's a smaller sample size than the rest of it, whatever. Next, 21 years old, 295, 369, 570. So a little bit higher in on base and slugging, but not way higher. Walked 2% less, struck out the exact same percentage, 24%, and swung and missed about the same number as Cags. That guy was Bobby Witt Jr. So I'm not here to tell, what I'm telling you is that it's an unknown. I know that it's like a lot of numbers to be like, what does that mean? I'm telling you, here's five guys who are highly thought of prospects in the Royal system, including Caglione, who's the number one. I have a bust, a guy who barely played in the big leagues. Nick Prado's a bust. MJ, who had a mediocre big league career so far, is now currently sent back down to the minors. Vinny, who's an everyday big league player. Bobby, who's a superstar. The numbers he's putting up in AA promise you nothing, and that's why they want to take their time. It is some of these like periphery numbers where they're kind of stuck gold trying to figure out, what does this mean? He's still striking out a lot and swinging and missing a lot, which are the two biggest concerns the organization has.
Yeah, it's not about this shows that there's a chance that, you know, he's not going to be successful in the big leagues. I think we all recognize there's always risk involved with any prospect. That's not what it's for me. For me, these numbers are relevant for the conversation that, well, he's doing this in double A. He could come up to the big leagues right this second and he could just dominate. That's why I like the numbers that you threw out there. I don't think the comparison is so much as, you know, hey, these guys did this in double A, and then look, some of them didn't succeed in the big leagues, and he's going to be the same way. I don't think that's the point of the exercise.
No, some of these guys, guy's a superstar.
Yeah, that's not the point of the exercise. It's more that, hey, double A numbers, these guys also dominated in double A. Why are they being patient? Work on some more important things that aren't just numbers based, right? Underlying things. And what the pitching matchups are and why there's not as much of a rush. That's all it is for me. It's just more of the pushback on the, hey, he's hitting 282 in double A and the big league club is struggling at offense. He should just come up right this second and dominate. that's all I think. That's why I like the numbers, not because I think it means that he's a 50-50 shot at panning out. He's a number one prospect in the organization. He's a top 50 prospect
in
baseball.
Like you said, other than Bobby, none of these guys are the number one prospects.
Yeah.
Prado was probably a top 5 prospect at his peak. MJ was probably a top 10 prospect at his peak. I can't go through weeklies on this thing. I'll just tell you both those guys were there. They were all top 100 guys. Like every single one of them were top 100 guys. And look, some of it I liked is because they play similar positions. Yeah. Like MJ was like a power hitting now corner outfielder. Prado played first. Vinny played first. Cag plays first. Like I'm trying to give you some guys that go in here. The numbers do not say bust or boom. The numbers tell you they want more time because what he's doing in Double A gives them no assurances. It gives them no promises that he's just going to come up and be a great big leaguer. And so they'd rather try to work through some of what they view are the slight problems in his game now before they throw him at the big league level. It's also easier. I'll just tell you, if this were 2005, if this were 2017, Cags be playing in the big leagues right now.
Okay, yeah, the team is 500 right now. They're coming off a playoff appearance.
Yes. If this team stunk, if they were the Colorado Rockies, if they were the Miami Marlins, I actually think you'd be justified in saying, get Jack Caglione up now, get him in the big leagues, and let's find out if this guy can play. They're not trying to rush him in this case. Great news is for you. You can just go down and watch him in Springfield on Saturday. You want Caglione play? 96.5thefan.com. This topic was not meant built around convincing you guys to go to Springfield. It was mostly just pointing out kind of where they are. Because I get the temptation. They are what? Bottom? They're dead last in the league in home runs. They have no power in the corner outfield. I get it. I think it was MLB Network. Here, I'll play this audio clip. This is MLB Network talking about it, not the organization. Because this is probably how most fans think.
The Royals trying to find their way in the Central. I have the numbers right here, John. 13 home runs ranks last among all teams. Enter Jack Caglione. I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist. You see that guy, you think,
right,
we need him now.
Right, and he's playing the outfield now, so yeah, there could be room as an outfielder for him. But, you know, I've been in touch with the Royals, and they are saying they're going to take it slow with Caglione. They still see a couple things they'd like to improve a little bit. This is a guy with immense talent, was a great pitcher and hitter at Florida as a Gator. Incredible. Was picked in the top 6 or 7 in the draft last year. I'm sure their fans are calling for him. He's got an 850 OPS, solid at Double A, Northwest Arkansas. Even had 2 hits off of Kershaw, a guy we mentioned earlier.
That's how we all feel, right?
So he looks good, but they still want to see a little bit more. They probably want to see how he does in the outfield because, as I said, he was a first baseman and a pitcher only at Florida.
So, like, when you listen to that, it's like...
Yeah, I mean, it's all the same stuff I think we've recognized.
I get it. You watch the outfield, and you're like, I'd like someone to slug some homers.
And he's played, what, is it 4 games in right field? So we're still not even 10 games.
He's
going to
play a couple...
He's playing twice a week, essentially, mm-hmm, in right field. So, and last week was the first week of it. So he's played, I don't know, 3 or 4 games in right field right now. These were all things that I don't know, I feel like Vern's talked about, we've talked about, of, like, that have to happen first. Before he gets called up to certainly the majors, but sounds like even to AAA.
He'll go to AAA next.
Yep.
I mean, they're going to do the logical progression. I was kind of hoping we'd get the local kid, but I think Kuderna pitches tonight in AA, so I don't know who's pitching on Saturday yet. I haven't looked.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I was kind of hoping we'd get the Noah Cameron pitching starting today. He's from St. Joe. I like rooting for the local kids to, like, have some success.
Yeah, I have not memorized the minor league pitching stats rotation. I haven't.
That's weird.
I haven't, actually.
I don't think at any point in my life I had that memorized. Even when I just covered this team for an entire year, I don't think I had the minor. And I was paying attention to the minors. They won 56 games. I was happy to look at the minor leagues during that stretch of time.
Yeah, Drew told us before he goes tonight, Drew wants to take a college campus tour. He's saying about going to college.
Yeah, are you seriously going to go? How are you even? I don't even know how to book that. You just call the bookstore? What's up?
No, or you just want to drive by Missouri State?
I'm not going on a tour. I'm going to the stadium. I'm looking at the... I'm going to see the football stadium, and then if I
see
have time...
See it from the outside or go in?
Can you go in? I'm going to see if it's open.
If the gate's unlocked.
I'm just going to jiggle a handle?
No,
just jump a fence?
It depends on the college, but there's college football stadiums that are wide open for people that like for instance, you might think, why would Missouri State be open, or Missouri State would be open because others wouldn't. The Florida Gators football stadium is open year round. You can walk in there and do steps if you want to. Like you can go and walk around Ben Griffin Stadium. So who's to say you can't do it at Missouri State? I don't know. I'm going to go see.
Does anybody know? Text line 913-586-7965. Or do you work for the university and we'll show Drew around?
I'll probably go to the bookstore as well to see what they got in there, and I might walk around campus if I got time before you know, we get into what we're doing.
It's funny because, like, you love college, so it makes sense. Like, you love college sports, college basketball, college football, all that stuff. I've never once thought, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go check out a college. Like, you and I are going
to
be
in. I mean, if I was near the big house in Michigan, I would do it. Not, no offense to, you know, some of these smaller
schools. I wouldn't even
schools. Do that. If I was near.
If I guess if I happen to be in East Lansing, what else am I looking at? But
Ann Arbor, yeah.
Or Ann Arbor,
like, I mean, I think.
Michigan State instead.
Yeah, I mean, if I was in Columbus, Ohio, I might want to go check out Ohio State. I think there's big universities. Like, when I was in Nashville, not the last trip, but the first time when I had some extra time in Nashville, I went by Vanderbilt's campus because, like, schools like that, I'll go check out the campus, I think. But I'm not going to go to, like, a much, much smaller school or go out of my way.
I've never really done that, I guess, maybe.
Like, when I was in near Berkeley, I went on Cal's campus before. I've been Cal Berkeley.
So you did walk out. Yeah. Okay, so you do a little bit of what Drew's talking about. Yeah. You're a snob about it. No Missouri State for you.
Yep, sorry.
They're D1.
They're moving up to FBS football.
For the first time. They've been D1.
Someone says they're a Missouri State alum. Easy to get on the football field.
Nice.
So they got a new turf.
Someone
says
walked right into Cameron Indoor, jiggled the handle. Right into Cameron Indoor, Duke. You're telling me if you were near Duke's campus.
Can you just walk into Allen?
No.
The doors are locked unless they're playing a game or something.
Someone says, is Drew trying to walk on now? Yeah, that's a new thing. I can walk on and play football. At quarterback at Missouri State, Drew's going to say that by 1 o'clock. Drew's going to say that
Although
today.
Although my eligibility has not been used, there's no chance. You could go and walk on UMKC's basketball team if you wanted to try. If they have open tryouts, you could go and try out for the basketball team.
Man, you imagine how embarrassing it would be for me. I mean,
now we got conflicting stories. Missouri State alum, they do not allow free access to the football.
I would assume that they don't. Assume it's a TCU's open. I think it just depends. With this being a Midwest campus, not that that means anything, but with Florida.
What are you trying to say?
With Florida or Texas, it's warm year-round. You know, it's one of, I don't know if KU's football stadium before, I don't know if David Booth Stadium was open
right
year-round.
New
I don't
look
know if,
looks great.
I don't know if Thoreau Field is open, where I can just go to Columbia and just walk not on the field.
We're gonna send Drew on a college stadium tour and he's just gonna try to break into random college venues.
Okay, there's a.
We'll get it sponsored by a bail bonds company. It'll be perfect.
From the times you get
perfect.
There is a line, picked and up. I'm not going to get picked up. That's the line I won't cross. But I'll definitely see if I'll be able to get in.
Somebody says from the 903, you guys are showing your age. Multiple TikTok accounts. Would they do this kind of thing? Maybe it's
I
get on TikTok sometimes. Yes, it's just my algorithm's different. I get a lot of food stuff. I just get my algorithm's just different.
He recently did it at the NFL draft. He tried to. It's let me see how late I can stay in the state. Like, he goes to games there, but then he tries to stay in the stadium all the time. Most of the videos are like that. Hmm. Like, he tries to stay as long as he possibly can before
somebody
security stops him or something like that. And even if security is like, "Hey, I need to get out of here."
So you're getting to Springfield earlier than us. And you're going to try to get on the football field. All right.
Yeah, I'll go.
He didn't say he was going to break any laws. Just said.
Oh yeah, I'm not going to look. If the gates are closed, I'm not even going to try to jiggle a handle. If the gates are closed and the door is locked, if the gates are closed and there's a lock on it, I'm not even going to try to open.
If you know how to pick a lock, if you know how to pick a lock, Drew's offering to drive with you to Springfield.
I'm
you have a kit that happens to, you know.
Locksmiths. We'll sponsor the college tour with Locksmiths and Bail Bondsmen. Mm-hmm. Perfect.
The Art of Sports and whatever, you know, Chico's Bail Bonds.
the 249 miles of stadium tour. Yes. Of college football stadium tour. I love it.
Don't forget, though, our Cody and Gold road trip is going to be presented by The Art of Sports right there in Town Center Plaza. Open 7 days a week. They're a direct MVP account for Tops and direct account for Panini as well. They buy, sell, trade, collectible sports cards, whatever you're looking for. That is the place to go in Kansas City. Up next, though, I got some news for both of you. Pretty wild stuff. The audience is guessing what it is. We'll explain. We also will have some video proof of it and audio next.